Hey everyone, this is Destiny Clark from Discover Ed with Destiny, and you're listening to Closeted History, LGBTQ plus stories of the past, the show where together we out the queer history you never knew. It's all about education, learning, and making the LGBTQ plus stories of the past that have previously been hidden from our society more accessible for everyone. Hi, how are you? Thanks so much for coming back for Season 1, Episode 2 of Closeted History, LGBTQ plus Stories of the Past. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome, and I hope that you stick around. I'm your host, Destiny Clark. My pronouns are she, her, and let's get learning. In this episode, we will dive into the very first Pride parades, when, where, and how they took place, and how this celebration has evolved over time. I thought it would only be appropriate since it is Pride Month and we can learn together the history of how this celebration came to be what it is today. But before we get started, I just wanted to say thank you so much for everyone who listened to the first episode and has supported me along the way of this new creative endeavor. It really means so much to me to not only be able to share my creative project with others, but a creative project that is so personal to me and that I feel so passionately about. So again, thank you so much. And special shout out to my partner, Luis, who made the intro music that you just heard and the outro that you'll hear at the end. If you didn't get a chance to listen to the last episode, I would check it out so that you can get some context about the Stonewall Inn. All right, so let's start a year after the uprising at Stonewall. So there were so many LGBTQ plus organizations that were coordinating and coming together after the events at Stonewall that night. In addition to the pre-existing groups, there were several others that were formed. It's rumored that prior to Stonewall, there were 50 to 60 LGBTQ plus organizations, and a year later, there were over 1,500. One of them being the Gay Liberation Front. They had many locations and chapters all across the country, like in New York, LA, Boston, San Francisco, and even in Illinois. They had grown into groups that met regularly, discussed issues, created publications, and even held workshops. There were several parades that took place all over the U.S., and we're going to talk about them in order. So, on Saturday, June 27th, 1970, the Chicago Gay Liberation held a march. It was the last Saturday of June, and the organizers hoped they would reach more shoppers in the Mag Mile area of downtown Chicago at the time. And it's interesting because I always thought that New York was the first city to celebrate the anniversary, but it was Chicago, which makes me love Chicago even more. And subsequent Chicago parades have been held on the last Sunday of June, coinciding with the date of many similar parades elsewhere. But on that particular parade for the first one, it was actually held on the 27th, so it was the very first one. In California, San Francisco held a march on June 27th as well. And they had what they called a gay inn on June 28th, 1970. And there was also a march on June 28th in LA, which, like the other Pride events, had some complications in securing a permit. But we'll talk about that a little bit later in the episode. Organizers received death threats, like, up until the day of the event. But despite their troubles, they had over 1,000 LGBTQ plus community members come to march in their parade down Hollywood Boulevard, which is pretty amazing. And then what's referred to as like the official Christopher Street Liberation Day March was held on June 28th, 1970 in New York City. So when you look up the first Pride Parade, this is what comes up, even though technically the first one was in Chicago because they celebrated the day before. So this march was planned from Greenwich Village along Christopher Street to the Sheep Meadow in Central Park. And what started with just a few hundred people ended in thousands. I'm not sure of the exact number. When I was doing the research, some sources said like 5,000 and then others said as many as 10,000. But I did find the flyer for the march and the gay inn that the Gay Liberation Front planned in New York I'll leave it in the show notes for you below. But it starts out with an inspirational message about how this march was much more than just the anniversary of Stonewall. It had been a year of living in the mindset of liberation for the LGBTQ plus community, which was very different from what was like the ideas that were held before then. Things were different after the uprising at Stonewall. The flyer says that the community, and this is a quote, at last have realized that they will never be able to be liberated by politely asking the system. Freedom is never given. It must be taken. And I just love that. Like, the way that the community came together unapologetically and stood up for their rights and liberation is really, really inspiring. Next, I want to highlight some of the challenges that these organizations experienced while trying to plan their events. So on November 2nd, 1969, a few short months after the events at Stonewall, Craig Rodwell, his partner Fred Sargent, Ellen Brody, and Linda Rhodes proposed the first Pride March to be held in New York City by way of a resolution at the Eastern Regional Conference of Homophile Organizations with the acronym ERCHO. And this conference and meeting took place in Philadelphia. But so all of the attendees at this meeting in Philadelphia voted for the march except for the Mattachine Society of New York, which abstained, which I found very, very interesting. The Mattachine Society's advocacy methods were described as like obsolete in the post-Stonewall world. They did things more like sit-ins and quiet picketing, so they voted against having the march in New York initially. However, later on, the replacement of the president of the Mattachine in New York by Michael Kotis in April 1970 ended any opposition to the march. Another piece of conflict that I wanted to highlight was the parade in New York didn't have a police permit, so early member of the Gay Liberation Front and marshal of the first Pride March, Mark Siegel, says that they held self-defense classes in order to protect themselves, like, just in case, because they weren't sure what was going to happen. And this makes sense given the violence that happened just a year before at Stonewall, plus like the sit-ins, the raids, and much more in between. And the last piece of conflict that I wanted to highlight was Morris Kite of the Gay Liberation Front. He was the founder of the LA chapter. Reverend Troy Perry of the Universal Fellowship of Metropolitan Community Churches, and Reverend Bob Humphreys, who represented the United States Mission. He was the founder. They all planned a parade in LA, but securing a permit from the city proved to be really difficult. They named their organization Christopher Street West, like, in an attempt to be more ambiguous in order to get approved for the permit. However, Los Angeles Police Chief Edward M. Davis told one of the organizers, "As far as I'm concerned," and this is a quote, "granting a permit to a group of homosexuals to parade down Hollywood Boulevard would be the same as giving a permit to a group of thieves and robbers." Yeah. The police commission finally granted the permit, but with the fees exceeding $1.5 million. At this point, the ACLU stepped in and the commission dropped all of its requirements except for a $1,500 fee for police service, which was later dismissed as well by the California Superior Court. So next, let's highlight some key icons. So Craig Rodwell and his partner Fred Sargent, as I mentioned before, Ellen Brody, Michael Brown, Marty Nixon, and Foster Gunnison of Mattachine, they made up like the core group of the CSLD Umbrella Committee. And other mainstays of the Gay Liberation Front organizing committee were Judy Miller, Jack Waluska, Steve Jerry, and Brenda Howard, who she actually has been referred to as the mother of Pride, and she was a bisexual activist. there were so many people and organizations that helped make the parades possible that it feels like impossible to highlight everyone who made the event special and even capable of existing. Of course, it could not be without the pioneers who were present at the Stonewall Inn Uprising as well, since this was to commemorate the anniversary. So I'd like to talk about the impact of the Christopher Street Liberation. The Christopher Street Liberation had a positive impact on the LGBTQ plus community by raising awareness of the issues they faced and helping to fuel the gay liberation movement. So the Times quoted Michael Brown, then, who was 29 and a founding member of the Gay Liberation Front. He described the march as, and this is a quote, "an affirmation and declaration of our new pride." The first marches were both serious protests and fun and served as a way to inspire others and bring awareness to this moment. The marches were repeated in the following years, and more pride marches started up in other cities throughout the world. In Atlanta and New York City, the marches were called Gay Liberation Marches, and the day of celebration was called Gay Liberation Day. In Los Angeles and San Francisco, they became known as Gay Freedom Marches, and the day was called Gay Freedom Day. As more cities and even smaller towns began holding their celebrations, these names spread and evolved. And in the 1980s, there was what's been described as kind of like a cultural shift in the gay movement. Activists who didn't share the same quote-unquote radical ideologies, mostly due to the emergence of like big organizations like the Human Rights Campaign, and also because of the AIDS crisis, which unfortunately took the lives of so many of the original activists. But at this point, many groups started to like drop the original gay liberation and gay freedom from the names and instead replaced it with gay pride. Now we see a huge influence from corporations and rainbow washing in the advertising, apparel, merchandising, and more, which is like a whole other thing for another day. But in conclusion, the first pride parade serve as a reminder of the courageous acts of those who came before us in the fight for LGBTQ plus rights and equality. Their brave and bold actions help us to still commemorate Pride Month, its origins, and the event that led us here today. Thanks for making it all the way to the end of the episode with me. You can find the transcript and all the links listed in the show notes. I'd love to hear what you thought of this episode. You can send me a message on the podcast Instagram at Closeted History, or reach out to me via my website, discoveredwithdestiny.com/contact. If you'd like to support the podcast, the best way to do so is to share an episode with a friend and leave a review. I hope you continue to learn more LGBTQ plus history with me in the next episode and as we embark on our learning journey together. As always, thank you for listening. You are important and your story matters. Until the next time, friend.